Well, Baba wouldn't let Marcia leave ahead of time, so we got our little group together, and we left the night before. Now, you know how hard it was to leave Baba, but we had to take care of things for Marcia. So we drove back to Washington, and we got to work the first thing in the morning, and we had to... Luckily, Helen, the housekeeper and all, she knew more than we did about arranging things, as Marcia would, but we had to get the people's addresses and their names and all, because we didn't want anything to happen that would cause any trouble when Baba walked in. So we had to put your name down, and then that was listed at the desk with one of the girls, so that when you come in with your little invitation, there'd been invitations sent out. I don't remember how many. No, it was, I know, well over 200. And we wanted to show how Marcia did those things. So each one of us had a little place we had to stay in. And you'd come in, you'd pass your invitation to one of the young ladies, and she checked it in the file. And then she would turn you over to one of the boys who knew where to take you, so we wouldn't have them all waiting there in one spot. And every now and then, Marcia would come up and say, you take this party, and they get in, and then everybody was looking as much to say, well, I've been standing here waiting in line. I want to get in. And Mercer brought one of the embassies, the wife, ambassador's wife, up. And there was three or four next. I was letting them in the room. And there was three or four at the head of the line that were getting a little bit impatient. And then Mercer said, will you see that this couple get in? And I looked at him and I said, Mercer, how can I? And I thought I don't want to cause any trouble there at the front. So, and she said, they're Ambassador so-and-so and his wife, and I thought, well. So there was a man standing first in line, and he overheard it, and I guess he knew we were worried, and he stepped forward, and he said, they can have my place, and I will go at the end of the line. Well, that saved all the afternoon, because it would have been...
Time for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. Well, I was just thinking, you know, they are important in Washington. Time. Yes. So... earlier in the day, Carson had put a fern, pots of ferns and mums and ferns and mums all up the walk from the car up to the Mercer's home. And on the inside, he had decorated it so beautifully with flowers, and the meal that he had prepared was lovely. And Helen called me in the kitchen to see the fish. So it was beautifully done. There was two smaller ones for Baba, and she had filleted them. And there wasn't a bone in there, but just folded the fish over. And then in for the Mundali, they had this tuna, which was a picture, the way it was prepared. But Mercer was so particular about what they had to eat and what Baba had to eat. And when Baba sat down to eat, he looked at the fish. And I'd like to have seen his expression. But he opened the fish and he took out two bones. Now, where he got the bones, no one knows. But the bones was larger than any bone could have been in that fish. And he showed it to Mercer, and I know how poor Mercer felt. He found two bones. So he just left it. He didn't eat. He didn't touch anything. Did he, Mercer?
No, he didn't. And then when he sauce for the rice, yeah. How can you make sauce out of fried fish? I mean, I thought he was talking about gravy, but he wanted curry, you see.
Yeah.
Nobody had told me about it.
Well, we got through the dinner beautifully, and some pictures taken. And then we had to drive over to the airport after that. And I know poor Marcia was working so hard, we all were, but we were working over here real hard, and we were also, our heart was over here with Marcia, because we could take it, but we didn't want her to have too much to take. And we drove to the airport, and because when we arrived there, it's really odd. When you're at an airport with Baba, it can be crowded, but all of a sudden, everybody just gives him room. And we all, you know, form a line around him, and here, I've never seen that happen to anyone else down there. And we saw it happen two or three times, and at Myrtle Beach the same thing happened. And we were all so anxious just to stand there and watch him till it was his plane time, which came much too early for all of us. But Andy was driving some of the Mundali over to the airport, and as usual he was chatting a mile a minute, and he drove past the Y, where you take to the airport or you go through to Alexandra. And when you do that, you can't get back on that. You have to go almost to Alexandra to get back. And we just made it back in time for them to catch the plane. I don't know if Mershta knew that.
Yes.
So he said he broke all speed limits, but Baba was just trying him out to see what he would do. And it could have been a lesson to him to take care of his driving.
It's hard to drive when your knees are knocking together, I'll tell you. a few little incidents that have always been very priceless to me. I don't know whether many other people noticed them. I think they're priceless to me because they are so just sweet little incidents that I happen to see in relation to Baba. We were following Baba through the paths at Myrtle Beach, and there was a woman about five steps behind, directly behind Baba, and we were about two behind her. We were very greedy. We were very competitive about getting close to him and seeing him as much as we could. And oftentimes we weren't really too nice to one another in a quiet way. And this woman got a stick, a small twig, between the sole of her foot and her sandal. On those paths, those of you who have been there know that you walk, it's soundless. You just don't hear any footstep. And when this woman stopped to remove the stick from her sandal, Baba stopped. Now, he was walking away. You know, the woman was following him. He stopped and turned around, and she was kind of upset because there were people coming directly behind her, and she felt a little embarrassed. But he turned around and looked directly at her, and the most beautiful smile, just as though, that's all right, I'll wait. And he did. And she, I know, felt very relieved. These are the things that I think, as much as anything else, convinced me of the perfection, at least, of his humanity. I've never had any way to calculate his divinity. But I accept it. I know that he is God. And I also know that he was perfect as a man, as a human being. And I've often said, if it were to come to pass, which is totally impossible, that I learned that he was just the grocery boy or something, I wouldn't love him any less. I couldn't love him any less. And neither could you. Another time, when we were at Baba's house, we met, going through the house, there's a hallway that sort of crosses, one hallway crosses another. And as I stepped around the corner, here was Baba's step from this side. And when these sudden meetings would happen, it gave you your ego, your everything, a chance to operate just immediately. I thought I should step back and let him pass in front of me, naturally, just natural courtesy. But he motioned for me to walk in front of him. And I hesitated to do that. And this is one small lesson I learned. I should have obeyed immediately. But you see, my mind was on protocol. My mind was on my manners. My manners shouldn't have been as important as doing exactly what he wanted me to do right now. I had another occasion that some of you might have heard about. When we went to Brooking Gardens with Mershta, of course, and Baba and the rest, I decided, well, this was a real ego trip. I decided that I was going to get, without question, the greatest movies that anyone ever took of Baba. Now, I'm not a good photographer at all. That wasn't what I meant. But the setting there is so absolutely great. These huge oak trees with the southern moss hanging from them. I could imagine Baba walking at a distance without having the bushes close to him and straw hats in my way and everything else like we found at the center. You know, bright light and dark shadow, and very difficult to get any pictures that were any good on the center. So I had four or five rolls of film in my pocket, and my trusty old rinky-dink camera. I said, I told Peggy that I was going to, not to worry about where I was, that I was going to move around a lot and get all these great shots. Well, we stood at the entrance to Brooklyn Garden, And Baba came in the car, and when he got out of the car, he walked up toward us. And if you've seen the movie, I'm sure you remember the scene. He walked up directly to me and held his hand out. You can see it in the picture until his hand goes below the eye of the camera. And if you look very carefully, you'll see one of the most, I can't say devilish smiles. But just one of the cutest twinkle in his eye, and this just a slight smile. And of course, I couldn't see that too well because I was, looking through the camera. So I followed Baba around the entire afternoon. I got ahead of him. I got chewed out for running on the grass by the guards. I came to one place where there was a brick wall about so high, and Baba was on the other side of that wall, sitting against a small tree, telling all of the lovers about Buddha. I wasn't there. I was on this side of the wall. Baba's back was to me. No way. So this kept happening, but I kept grinding away. Well, now we'll skip to a few weeks later when I got the film back after it was processed. Peggy was at work. I couldn't wait for her to get home. I knew it was selfish, but I couldn't wait. So I thought, I'll just set up the projector and run them off and put them back in the box and sneaky. And just check them out, just check them out. So I put them on and everything's going great. Baba got out of the car, we're down Brook Green Gardens, and I think, this is the good part, this is. So Baba walked up to me, held out his hand, and with that lovely smile, that's all she wrote. I didn't get another picture all day. Now, you may laugh, but I tried for a long time to read something into this. Now wait. Wait just a minute. You know why? Because everything, but absolutely everything that Baba did had some spiritual meaning. It might not seem to have had at the time, but he didn't waste a motion, he didn't waste a glance, he didn't waste a move. Now, I might have misread entirely what happened, but I knew he didn't do that just to play a trick on me. I knew that. And I knew it wasn't just a malfunction of the camera or the film, because I got pictures when we got later on, another point, the camera and film was fine. So I thought, I wonder why this could have happened. Well, I came up with a solution, and you can buy it or not, but it's my story. Here I was. I was going to do what I wanted to do, right? I was going to get some real great pictures. Mm-hmm. But what did I do? And this happens every time I do what I want to do. I get nothing. And don't think that experience is unique to me. Every time you do what you want to do without realizing that the most important thing that I missed that afternoon was being with him. Do you know that I missed that beautiful experience that whole afternoon of being close to him and hearing the explanations that I wanted so much to hear? It's like the man that said, if you hadn't asked that question, I would answer a question that you should know. See, I cheated myself. It wasn't his fault. I did it myself. And I missed the whole thing. Now, if my reading is true, then I did really profit by that experience. But this isn't something that we should think about just when we were with Baba or when you feel his presence. It's something that you should be aware of when you're taking one of those ego trips that tell you you're going to get the greatest shots in the world. That's when it counts to remember him. Because that's when you go down the trail and run into a blind alley. Don't do anything that you can consciously plan or have time to think about that you don't consider him. Because he is the only guide. I mean the only guide, because he works through Murshida. Murshida is your guide as well. But you know, of course, that Murshida working is Baba working. So when I say he's the only guide, you understand my meaning. So the only time we really goof is when we forget Baba. And it's very easy to do. I scribbled down a few things quite a while ago that I'd like to share with you, because I'll never find a group of people this large that will be kind enough not to react honestly to what I'm reading. If you don't like it, you said how much your heart would sing if his form before your eyes would bring, and this great sight you did not see just then. But as you spoke, we saw him clearly, his face, his eyes burned our hearts nearly. So when one looks deeply in a lover's eyes, reflected one might see the ancient one. But a word, only a slave can know a master. The only power you have, the only strength you own, the only gift that you can give is love. It is without measure. But you cannot remove the treasure from the warehouse by force. It will not yield to clever manipulation. The tumblers are so silent that there is no way to hear their working. Deception will not fool the guardians of this gate. The signal from the loving heart will open wide the vault. Take all your heart can hold, then give all away, for this is the only gift there is, which never binds and never fails to please the receiver. Now make ready. Loose the chargers. Every rider in his seat. I'm sorry, I should have mentioned, this is certainly not mine. This is Rabia. Now make ready. Loose the chargers. Every rider in his seat. Tremble not as the distracted herd when they the lion meet. Let the specter's flowing garments touch you as they rustle by. Allah call. And on their camels let the phantom riders fly. O heart, weak follower of the weak, that thou should traverse land and sea, in this far place that God to seek, who long ago had come to thee. Roaming across a continent, the tartan moves his shifting tent, but never quite forgets the day that when in his father's arms he lay. The wine of God's grace hath no brim. If it appear to have a brim, 'tis the fault of the cup, Rumi. I only want to say one more thing. I want to let you all know that the Washington Baba family, as we often refer to ourselves, sends their heartfelt love to you all. We're a very small group, but we have kind of a trick with that. We use a very small room. So in fact, it seems just as filled as this does. It's just as filled with love as this room is. And we thank you all for your smiles, for your love, and just letting us be here with you. Most of all, we thank you, Murshida. Thank you.
We thought it would be nice to show the Muirs a little bit of our play. think that Denise has managed to get the sprockets or what have you put together right, and we will go on from where we left off, which I think was when Ron had his mouth open to sing, and then we couldn't go any further, and I don't really know what came after that, but it'll be a long time, I'm afraid, before we ever get this film all edited and titled and ready to send around, so, and I'm sure we'll enjoy as much as you do. You want to put this over here?